Hello, and welcome to episode 215 of Checkpoint Chat. My name is Alessandro Barbosa, and I'm joined by Matthew Figuera.
A virus-infested me.
Virus-infested. Spore-infested.
So if my voice sounds... if my voice sounds a bit weak, it's because I'm a bit under the weather. It's a great time. I love the change of season flus that I tend to get.
Mm-hmm.
It's although, like, I know we're not in autumn yet, but the air has been a bit nippier.
Temperature's like doing a roller coaster thing. It was like fairly cold in the evenings this week, and now it's scorching hot again.
So. My body's just like, I don't know how to deal with this. I'm like, nor do I.
And my body's like,
cool,
point.
Have an aching body and erratic temperatures. And I'm like, cool, thanks.
You're just thanks, taking man. Your Last of Us watch along cosplay far too seriously.
This is about grew my beard. I'm Joel now.
I'm Joel. Joel, if you shave it just slightly, you can be Tommy as well.
So. Oh, man, what a show.
Good. Yo, what a banger of a show that every episode just keeps... I mean, I can't even say keeps getting better. They're just all so fucking good. Every single one of them.
Like, I do love the Joel meme that came out this week. Of like,
he's having like panic attacks.
With Joel having panic attacks, even like, this is me when something happens.
You're like, this is me when I get up from my chair.
Like
when I drive to work.
It's great. I love it.
It's good.
The show's been...
I thought there were only 8 episodes. Apparently there's 9, which makes a lot more sense because I was like, boy, they have a lot to do in 2 episodes.
I also thought the pacing wasn't off, but I was like, oh man, like they've got 3 or 4 episodes left. How are they going to wrap this all up? But then I remember that's actually how the game was as well. Summer was, I'd say, more than half the game. The first season.
Yeah, a lot of it
and
was
then
in
you,
summer,
you,
yeah.
You, like, autumn, winter, spring, like, so quickly.
It was almost kind of a shock when you jump between seasons. I was like, oh, we're doing this. Oh, okay.
That set false expectations because I was like, oh, my God, if the first 10 hours of summer, is this a 40-hour game? It's like, no.
Yeah, exactly.
No,
it definitely wasn't like that.
Like, it's a 15-hour game.
I got events completely messed up in my mind because when I watched this week's one, I was like... Oh, it's snowing. They're in winter already. So I'm like, cool, I know what's going on. And then the episode played out and I was like, did they just skip over an entire... Are they like not going to go there? And then by the end of it, they reach that point and I'm like, oh, okay. So they took essentially what was in a different season in the game and just plopped it in winter. Yeah.
Because I think... Yeah. Okay, this is spoilers. If you haven't played the game and you're watching the show, well, I mean, if you're up to date, you've seen that Joel gets... stabbed at the end of the last episode, which happens in the game as well.
Does it? I thought he falls on something.
He does. He gets. Yeah. I think he gets pushed or something, and he gets impaled on something.
Yeah,
that's exactly what happens. And then he does get chased by people, and Ellie like gets him on the horse, and they go. But I think that happened in autumn, and then the DLC Left Behind is like in winter, where you see Ellie looking after Joel.
Left Behind's prequel.
I don't know, but I mean, remember they run it simultaneously because they show you do the past stuff, but they show how Ellie looked after Joel. Because in the game, he's just like in shelter and then he's better. And you're like, oh, how did this happen? And the DLC.
No, but there's stuff in winter that happens.
Yeah, no, stuff does happen in winter, but the DLC does cover a little bit of modern day and Ellie's backstory. It jumps between the two.
I don't remember it jumping back. I just remember it being a prequel, but you're probably right.
Because remember in the DLC, she actually goes to a shopping mall.
And that's where she remembers.
Yeah, the perspective shifts between her and her friend in that last
shopping mall. That's going to be...
I think that's the next episode.
Because we know for a fact that the DLC is being covered because... Riley has been cast, like an actress from Euphoria is playing Riley. I can't remember her name now.
I think that'll be the whole of the next episode is just that story.
Yeah, that makes the most sense.
I'm not ready.
I guess this is a spoiler, a very minor one, but did they just like not do the whole giraffe thing?
No, that's still coming.
I thought that was at the university.
No, the university was the monkeys. The giraffe thing is... Some spring, I think.
So it's right near the end.
Yeah, it'll be like episode 8.
Because I was like, there's no way. Like that.
That's such an iconic
moment from the game. Like there's just no way they can just omit that.
They'll definitely have that.
Yeah. series is fucking damn good. There was things in this latest episode that happened that were just like had me smiling, like when Ellie's in the canteen and shouts at that other character from across the hall.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. Nice. And then Shani was like, who's that? And I'm like, no one.
Like, no one.
No one, just a random person.
Wink, wink.
Yeah. I do. It is funny, though, because Neil Druckmann was asked whether that was an Easter egg. And he's like, if you listen to conversations in the second games, there's very clear storyline, or like there's very clear dialogue explaining how Ellie and Dina first met.
Okay.
And it kind of exactly describes that scene.
Hilarious.
Yeah,
nice.
So he's like, I don't reckon it's an Easter egg, we're just showing things in chronological order, so I guess. And when they made the first game, they had no idea Dina even existed at that point, because like they weren't even sure they were making another game, so quite cool. Is good, would recommend, and I think if you aren't watching it because you got mad about the third episode, well, sucks
you're
to be
missing
you.
Out, man.
You're just missing out. We get to
game
video
releases?
Games?
Let's go.
Yeah, game releases, let's go.
Everyone's like, oh my God, this is the world's shortest episode.
We played
nothing this week.
We're just going to jump to video game releases. Yeah.
Let me pull up the list. Yeah.
Let's check one chat to talk about video games. We've been playing pretty much the same game this week because a lot of other stuff has come out. But we either got code like really late in the week or... Yeah, that's actually most of the... So we've both got Like a Dragon Ishin that we want to play. Well, I do want to play that. But I'm just so heavily invested in Atomic Heart at the moment that I didn't want to put it down until like I'm kind of finished it, because it's not that long. You have finished it.
I have.
And how long did you think it took?
I think it was about 14 to 15 hours. Yeah, that seems about right. Cool. It's funny though, because we've spoken about this before, where if a developer says this game is 25 hours long, like just subtract 5 hours. A lot of those estimations are always like way too generous. I was like, no, 15 hours. I did a little bit of side stuff, but I mostly mainlined the game. And I rolled credits in, I'd say about 14 to 15 hours. I think the game is not without some problems, but I really enjoyed my time with it. I know I spoke about it last week. You hadn't really played. Oh, wait, you hadn't even touched it last week, I don't think.
I'd played like the intro, essentially. Yeah.
Look, it's a very, I think it's a very unique setting. Like, just to recap, it's set in the early 1950s, like an alternate Soviet Russia, where the discoverer of polymer has basically catapulted the society to the forefront of technology. This tech lets you learn an entire syllabus, for example, or just it just hands off manual labor to robots so that society can focus on, you know, just living and arts and discoveries, whatever. So I think that table setting is really good. But the story itself is wild, which I think you've played enough to know, like, man, this protagonist, P3, very unlikable. And I think even by the end of the game, I still found him very, like, just annoying, I guess. A very few times that I actually sympathize with the character. Although things... they do contextualize and obviously explain like who he is, where he came from. But I don't know. The story feels a little bit all over the place. I don't know what your thoughts have been thus far.
Yeah, this protagonist sucks. He's so shit.
He's annoying.
I can't recall the last time I've played a game with a protagonist this unlikable. He's just so unreasonably aggressive all the time.
That's it, yeah. Like it's everything. Like, there's no middle ground.
It's like if you gave a voice to, I think Darren actually mentioned it, he had a good word for it early in the week. He was like, this character is what BJ Blazkowicz would have been if Machine Games just didn't understand how to make him a modern action character.
Yeah.
Like, he is the Doomslayer or BJ Blazkowicz from 1993 given a voice.
Given a full-on, you know, like, voice performance. Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Completely oblivious to like, rational thought and just any sort of tact. So it gets tiring very quickly because there's no sort of, like, character growth. Mm-hmm. You think, oh, okay, he's this gruff, really taking no bullshit stance from the get-go. And over time, him and this polymer glove, that's like this AI companion that you have throughout the game. Charles. Yeah, like they're going to, you know, come to terms eventually. And they sort of do. They at least have more human conversations with one another, because in the first like 3 hours of the game, every time your glove talks to you, this protagonist P3 is just like so snarky and aggressive towards him. He's basically just like, fuck you, shut up. Yeah. Like, I don't care what you have to say, blah, blah, blah. And it just gets so, so tiring all the time. So, yeah, I really do not like him. It's a bit much. It's not that fun to constantly hear. And the story so far seems to be okay.
Look, the story is not bad, but it's not.
It's very on the nose.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I'm finding. Like, everything is so explicitly told to you. Uh-oh, Siri's coming to my aid here. Hello. It's so explicitly told to you without, you know, any sort of ambiguity. Where, you know, Bioshock works really well because you're exploring Rapture after a disaster's happened. And you're kind of getting a lot of this environmental storytelling that is kind of informing you of what's happening and what might have transpired here. Here, it's more like the glove is telling you what happened.
Yeah.
Like, very explicitly, like, this happened, this happened, this happened. And the timelines kind of, like, don't make sense. So you see the disaster starting. You see when the robots turn and attack people. And I don't know, are you, like, knocked out for like a month? Because I don't understand how everything got so fucked up so quickly.
I don't think it's that long. I think it's a short period of time. It must be pretty quick.
Like, but like all these offices seem like they've been abandoned destroyed for months.
Yeah.
Like I don't know. Makes zero sense how it went from 0 to 100 so quickly. So yeah, everything seems to be accelerated on this timeline that really doesn't make that much sense, and it just kind of pulls you out of the moment because you feel out of place.
Yeah.
But yeah, other than that, it just seems to be a very basic, like, scientist doesn't trust government, government doesn't trust scientist, you are the, like, caught scapegoat in this entire thing. Yeah. And that's kind of it. The window dressing on the side, like you were saying, is very good, I think. I think it...
Yeah.
It looks really good. It looks the part. It's got a very good sense of place in this, like, retro-futuristic USSR. Like, what the future would look like if people in the 50s could make that happen based on what they knew. I think one of the coolest things, which isn't even a gameplay thing, one of the coolest things I've come across is how they have radios that predict music from the future. Yeah, so they have like music that sounds almost like it would be in place here, but there's like a paradox with that, because by listening to that music, it influences what the future of music would be, because it would influence current artists. So it keeps changing, which is kind of neat. I thought that was quite a cool idea.
Yeah, the music in this game, real good.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's phenomenal.
I think the best part of this game is its combat. I think it's really crunchy and really feels great and got a good balance between melee and range. So you've played around with far more weapons than I have. So does it keep evolving in a satisfying way?
I think, look, you unlock a lot of stuff pretty quickly depending on how much exploring you do. So I reached a point where eventually I had my standard set of weapons and I just upgraded them. So I was telling you before we started recording, I ditched this axe that you see in the gameplay footage now for a short blade that I upgraded that I could, it gave me like a ranged option with this blade. And it was very satisfying to use throughout the whole game. And the same goes for the weapons. Like, they are old school, if I could you know, for lack of a better term, you get kind of like an old school pistol, an AK-47, a shotgun. But yeah, it definitely has a weight to it, especially the melee combat. I think it's really good. Like, there are times when you finish an enemy off and just the way your weapon moves, you're like, slice him in half or slice their head off. Or, and I think there's been a lot of attention paid to that, and it does feel very good.
Yeah, 100%. The melee stuff is nice. I think the inventory management is slightly cumbersome, but it's not like awful. Like, in the heat of a fight, I can get to the weapons I want. I think it has a version of like Bioshock's plasmids. It's just your polymer abilities.
Yeah.
That stuff is weirdly laid out. Like, you've got shock, which is like your electric attack, which is almost like a primary ability. Yeah. So that's always mapped, irrespective of what you have.
That was very confusing for me.
So confusing.
When you unlock your first alternate ability to like equip it, I'm like, okay, I've equipped it, but I can still use my
shock.
It is very strange.
So shock is always there. It's just on triangle or on Y or whatever. And then you can only have two polymer abilities equipped at a time, which is also very strange. Like, you don't just have an inventory for them. So you can swap between those, you can switch them out, but if you basically should only invest in two of them because other ones are just going to sit in your, you know, in your gear folder or whatever, and you're never going to have access. You know, whereas Bioshock had like a radial menu for your plasmids. I just don't understand the thinking here, but it does force you to hone in on using two that kind of work in conjunction with shock really well. So right now I've got the polymer shield, which I picked specifically just to get past a boss. and I've got this like mass telekinesis, so I can like levitate a bunch of enemies around me in the air and then press it again, and it like brings them to the ground with some force because I've upgraded it, which is really nice because like while they're in the air, I can actually shoot them and then bring them down to the ground and then hit them a bit. So I can like pick apart powerful enemies very quickly. And then if I've just upgraded shock quite a bit, so it's quite like potent. There's not that many abilities to choose from, and some of them just don't seem that exciting to me. So I think we were talking before the show, Frostbite is a bit weird. You were saying it comes more into play near the end of the game, but like currently it's like... It's weird to me because it's like... It's very explicit about this is only used to immobilize enemies, and if you hit enemies while they're frozen, they actually take reduced damage, and it just accelerates the time that they thaw out. So it is mostly about keeping enemies in place, not like keeping them in place and doing loads of damage very quickly. That's like not what it's... there's a polymer jet one, which is strange. I've tried it a bit.
I've never used it.
It feels like you need like a bunch of weapons with elemental abilities to make that thing useful. So it basically coats enemies in like polymer liquid. You can envision how that comes out of your hand, how it looks. And then it basically accentuates like fire, electricity, and frost abilities. So a lot of your guns, you can upgrade them to have a canister holder. And that means you can then attach a canister to a gun that gives it fire, frost, or electricity. Damage. Like I've got fire on my shotgun quite a bit because I think it's quite effective. So I guess that just makes that better. But it seems like, again, when you've only got two slots, you've got to be very picky about like, okay, this is only situational. If I have weapons with this thing. So it's kind of a pointless use of a slot if I do not have weapons with fire or electricity currently. I don't know what any of the others are.
I think you've basically covered all of them.
There's not a
huge selection of like...
Because then there's character abilities, and then there's abilities that you can upgrade to make your energy bar bigger, which is like what your energy weapons draw from instead of bullets. So, and usually, well, the two weapons I have that draw from that, they kill that bar so fucking quickly that it seems pointless to try and like extend that, to be honest, because I don't know how much more I can do with that. So but it still feels cool. Like I feel very empowered when using those abilities and using it in conjunction with like a shotgun or an axe. It feels good. It looks good as well. I agree with you now. The open world areas do not look as good.
No.
And they aren't as fun to play.
No. There is... It's kind of like one big hub that you kind of go in and out of, depending where you're on the story. It feels very like... I think when you first go out, you're like, oh my God, like how big is this game? There's so much to do. Everything kind of looks the same. It's just a big open world, rolling green hills and trees, and it looks very samey.
There's stuff to do. Like, I like the little puzzle rooms that you do to get upgrades for your guns. I think that's cool.
But visually, just in general, you know, the tighter, more like hand-carved areas, for lack of a better description.
The main story areas look better.
Phenomenal. Like, I think the art direction in this game is stellar. It looks good. The architecture is like chef's kiss. That opening, everything's so grand and like reaching to the sky. And now you come out of the, you know, if you're watching the footage, you're in a car flying down from a floating platform. It looks good. Like, the table setting of this game is phenomenal. Like, I really
It runs really well. It runs at like 60 all the time. Like, it's... And I was watching, so Digital Foundry put out a video yesterday, and they were like, oh yeah, this thing's running at 4K, like straight up. So
it looks
sharp. It's got great lighting. It runs really great, which is good for the combat. So it's cool.
Just to go back to the combat, did you ever find that the aiming was too sensitive?
Yes.
Like, I've
turned it down.
Yeah, it's a thing of... Most games have a thing of when you're aiming in general, there's one sensitivity, but the moment you aim down sight, it's a lower sensitivity.
Yes.
This game doesn't have that. I feel like I aim down sight and it's still the same. Me, like,
yeah. And the acceleration is way off, because usually there's like a curve. So like, as you're moving to the right to aim, it slows and then accelerates. So if you're making fine adjustments, you can do that. This one is just linear. It's just like, whoop,
just goes.
It feels super weird. There's a lot of like settings things in this game that like irk me a little bit. There's also, I don't know how many you ran into, but I've run into a bunch of bugs that are a bit frustrating. Like, I've had some visual bugs every now and then, which I'm like, okay, that's fine. Things popping in like in and out of existence right in front of me. But yesterday I had a bug where the little log that comes up on the side when you've just looted things and it shows you what you looted,
it didn't
disappear. So it just stayed there forever. And I was like, cool, that's great.
I've had no real bugs. There was one where, weirdly, I ran into an area and then every 10 seconds my game froze, like 2 seconds.
Oh,
I was
hectic.
Like, oh no. That
did
is
you,
not, I just reloaded.
Did you ever have an enemy T-pose in front of you?
No. I would have loved that.
I literally had a... You know how often the white, like, humanoid robots run at you?
Oh, yeah.
And as they get to you, they do, like, a drop kick.
Mm.
9 times out of 10, this guy, he ran at me. And at the point where he was going to do the drop kick, because I was ready to dodge, he just froze and T-posed. And I was like, what the fuck just happened?
I had it before where... So that weapon I told you about where you... It's got, like, the melee weapon's got a ranged attack. If I used that... As they were about to do like that jump kick, they would like just fall. It was hilarious. I should have recorded it. Yeah, that's...
It's a good time. Little bugs aside, I'm still having a great time with this game. I think it's fun.
And it's on Game Pass. So if you're on Xbox or PC...
It's apparently not phenomenal on Xbox. There's hella bugs on
really?
Xbox. Yeah, right. So maybe wait for a patch or two because it is... We have played... the significantly more smooth version on PlayStation. Xbox is not in a great space right now. But again, it's on Game Pass, so... Yeah. Not great.
Yeah, I imagine it's not great.
Yeah. It even runs on the original Xbox One. It's on PS4 as well, which is kind of insane to me.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
What does that even look like?
How. Not great.
My goodness.
Not good. It's a fun game. Like you said, I have issues with it just like you do. I think the difficulty is a bit uneven sometimes. There's like certain parts where I'm just rolling through and then a boss will just absolutely plant me Like, and I'll just be stuck there. And I'm like,
I think my closing thoughts is that it's not without its issues, but overall, I really enjoyed my time with it.
It's a good time. Mm. Yeah, it's a good time. I would have a lot better time with a better protagonist. I swear to God, the first 3 hours, I was like, I don't know if I can play this game with this guy talking as much as he talks. But thankfully, he tapers off. Because, boy, those first 2 hours were killing me. I was just like, this is so annoying. Like, so I think the last time we spoke about an annoying protagonist was when we were talking about Aloy in Horizon Zero Dawn. And this is magnitudes worse. Like, Aloy is fine. Aloy is like slightly irksome because of her personality in that game. Like, she feels higher than everyone, and she comes off as like, I know everything, you need to listen to me. So that's, this guy is just an asshole.
He's just a complete asshole.
Straight up. Like, so
Atomic
Heart.
Good time.
Good.
Recommend.
Would recommend. So yeah, we haven't been playing much else. That'll probably change next week. But I do want to just give some closing thoughts on the PlayStation DualSense Edge, which is the fancier controller that I got a couple of weeks back.
So pretty.
It's very nice. So I've been using it a bunch. I used it playing Hogwarts Legacy. I've used it playing Atomic Heart, obviously. So I have a much better sense of how it works and how to use it. As you can see, I took the paddles off because I didn't really find use for
them. Some would say.
Yeah. It is a better DualSense controller. Like, there is no disputing that you are getting a much better controller than the base controller when you buy this. I do think it takes a lot of work on your part to make it work. So there's a lot of software in the PlayStation 5 to tinker around with and make this controller, you know, very specific to the games you're playing. So like I said, you can edit the dead zones on the sticks. You can edit the sort of sensitivity curves. Like, they've got a bunch of predefined sensitivity curves, and then you can just make your own. The same thing with the triggers. You can do the same thing. I never found the need to do any of that. I messed around with it and I was like, cool, it works. But I don't see the point of having a sensitivity curve that's more parabolic as opposed to linear. For the single player games that I'm playing. The same goes with the trigger buttons. So there's only 2 shoulder buttons as opposed to 4 on a lot of controllers of this kind. Like, the Xbox Elite controller is 4. A lot of SCUF controllers have 4. This is 2. So you can only map 2 buttons there. So I used it in Hogwarts Legacy to kind of manage my inventory a bit better without having to take my hand off aiming, which made combat kind of a little bit easier. You know, it made that awful spell management system slightly more bearable.
More palatable.
So that works nicely. I still do not understand. So if you look here at the front, there's these 2 little buttons under the thumbstick. You can see them there. Now, both of those buttons do the exact same thing. When you hold them down, it allows you to quickly hot swap between saved profiles on the controller. So you can save 4 hardware profiles. So like, oh, I mapped the sticks and the triggers and my paddle buttons to these things for Hogwarts Legacy. Now I've got another profile for Atomic Heart and I want to switch between them. That's what this button does. I don't know why there's 2 of them.
So you can hot swap faster, twice as fast.
It would make more sense if this other button or one of them could be used for something else. What? I'm not sure. I just feel like they were like, we can't put 1 because symmetrically that would look stupid.
Yeah.
So we're just going to put 2, but they do the same thing. They literally do this. They have 0. And this is all that button does, is swap between profiles. That's all you can do.
That's
so hilarious. It's a strange thing. Now, what else? So yeah, the trigger stops are nice. So the short trigger stop is pretty neat. It's not the smoothest I've ever felt. But it gets the job done. So like, the reason you'd want to do this is if you're playing something like COD and you want your R2 to initiate much, much quicker, you can reduce the trigger movement and then reduce the sensitivity in the settings as well if you really want to. And then your shooting will be a lot quicker. It does feel, it's not sturdy enough that I would feel confident putting a lot of weight on that trigger. Like, it does feel like it's almost like a pin there that if I really press, it's just going to fucking drive right through that. And that's kind of for such an expensive controller. Mm. I wanted to show this. So remember the whole thing about this controller was you can replace the sticks because, you know, all the controllers nowadays, they use the potentiometer sticks and those things just eventually develop stick drift like crazy. So the DualSense Edge has a solution where they've made modular stick components that you can replace at will. And I just want to show you how you get this out. Fuck, I can never open this. So there's a release at the bottom of the controller that lets you open up the front of the controller. And it is kind of cool if I can
just get there.
So there's buttons like recessed here. And then once you have the release up, you have to like pull something up here. There we go. Got it. So there. So you've got this little piece that's come off. And now you've got like the sticks that are exposed. Mm. Sorry, this is very visual. And then you can just kind of like pull it out. You've got a little metal flap that comes up and then the stick just pops out. So now I've got the little module there. Then, so say if this stick develops stick drift, I think Sony, I actually don't know if they've started selling them, but I think they said they'll sell them for like $15 or $20.
Mm.
So you just buy a module and you just pop one back in. And that keeps the DualSense going for quite a while, which is great considering how much it costs, you know what I mean? And the process of replacing them is actually far easier than I thought it was. It requires no tools. Now it's just back. Boom.
Easy peasy.
Ready to go. So yeah, pretty neat controller. The battery life is very poor.
Well, the battery is smaller.
Yeah, the battery is smaller to compensate all of the stuff in here. Yeah. It's... listen, I will play like a session, like a 2-3 hour session at night, and it is on one bar. And I'm like, what?
Excuse me?
So if you forget to charge this thing at night and you play the next day, it will die.
You're going to be that person playing with the power bank.
Yeah. The neat thing is the controller case, which I showed last time, has like a pass-through for your cable. So you can put it in the case and plug it in. And have a charge that way, and it comes with a really nice long USB-C cable. And the case is very nice to like protect it, but I have one of those little charging docks for the controllers from the official Sony one, so I just plop it on there. But it is annoying because there are times where I've like put it on the table, gone to the kitchen and gone to bed without thinking. I've come back the next day and it's like dead. Like I start a game and it comes up with that notification like, oh, your controller's about to die. I'm just like, oh, for fuck's sake, man. It's super. Listen, I have 3 DualSense controllers, so don't come at me and be like, you just need a second controller. I have three.
This is
It doesn't matter. It's still stupid.
Yeah.
Like, it's still. I have 3 Xbox controllers. Do you know how many times I have to cycle those? Like, once a month. Like, it's insane how different it is. So, whatever. But I think a lot of people who are buying this sort of controller are either a very competitive gamers, so they will probably play wired anyway because latency, it actually makes a difference to them.
Yeah.
And then a lot of those settings are actually relevant to the sorts of games you're playing. I think if you predominantly play single player games, you will not get what you need out of the DualSense Edge. You will get a more comfortable controller. I think the rounded edges are a lot better and the rubber grips feel very good. So a more comfortable one that's a bit weighty, but you are paying $4,500 just for that because I highly doubt you're going to use a lot of the features. That is a lot of money. That is a third of a PlayStation 5.
Yeah. You put it like that, it's like, oh, wow.
I can't justify it unless you are if you really feel like I really need to adjust the sensitivity curves of my sticks, or I really need a short throw trigger, or listen, if you want to spend $4,500 to have 2 paddle buttons, that is you. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. I will tell you that is not worth it in my view.
Yeah.
That is why I don't own an Xbox Elite controller either. This is a controller for a very specific market. And I think if you've been playing on PlayStation waiting for an official product like this, it is a very good one.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to worry that, oh, Scuf does a better one or, you know, Razer does a better one. Like this is a fucking good one. And the way it integrates with the PS5 is probably the biggest draw here.
Yeah.
But I don't think you should be looking at this controller if you're just playing fucking Skyrim or Horizon Zero Dawn.
Playing
or
an ancient
God of War.
Game, you know.
Although with God of War, I think recalling my axe with that paddle button would feel pretty fucking
really
good.
Nice.
Yeah, it'd be pretty fucking good. Anyway, I guess thanks to Gamefinity for letting me use this for such a long time. I don't know when they're going to come and reclaim it. Come and knock on my door and
kick down the door like, give it back.
I'll come home one day and it'll just be like not there.
There'll be a rock in its place. That did the old classic Indiana Jones, just swapped it out.
Thank you. Yeah.
Cool. So that is the DualSense Edge.
DualSense Edge review. Should we jump to game releases for the week?
Yes.
We are heading into the week of... into the month of March. Can you believe it?
Cannot believe
it. We just got some games left for the month, and then we are right along into some big ones for March. Oh my God, I didn't even realize I was coming out so soon. So for the end of Feb, we are looking at games releasing from today, February 25th, up until March 3rd. So we've got Voltaire, the vegan vampire. Sorry, nice. I had to like laugh very quickly there.
Nice.
Steam Early Access on PC. Scars Above, coming to PC, PlayStation, and Xbox, February 28th. Dead. What word is that? Side?
Dead, yeah. Side? Sick.
Dead Side Cub, coming to Steam Early Access on PC, February 28th. Remedium Sentinels, Steam Early Access, February 28th. Catan, console edition. I guess this is like Settlers of Catan.
Mm.
Coming to PlayStation and Xbox, February 28th. Big one for Darren and other Destiny nerds out there. Fucking nerds.
Destiny 2.
Destiny 2 Lightfall, the next big expansion, and seems to be a big overhaul of Destiny 2. So lots of people excited.
How old is Destiny now? Destiny 2.
Destiny 2 came out in 2015, I think.
It's going on 8 years now. It's insane how this game is still...
I lied, 2017.
But still.
So six years.
6 years is still a long time.
Damn. It's a long time.
For a single
PC, consoles, and Xbox. I wonder when they'll drop old consoles from Destiny. I guess they don't have to because the technology is not really changing.
No.
So. Yeah. Then right along into March, the day before, I'm pretty sure this is not out. I'm pretty sure this got delayed until like the end of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Delay. Yeah, it got delayed till November. This game looks like a scam. I say that. Fight and Rage, coming to PS5 and Xbox Series X and S, March 1st. Leap, all in capitals, coming to PlayStation and Xbox, March 1st. King of the Castle, PC, March 2nd. And then another big one for the week, Wulong Fallen Dynasty, the Koei Tecmo. Is it Koei Tecmo?
I think so. It's the Neo.
The Team Ninja, sorry.
Team Ninja.
Not Koei Tecmo.
It is the Neo people, right?
Yeah, it's the Neo team from Neo 1 and 2. This is their new Souls-like card game. Also on Game Pass. Coming to PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X and S. There's a demo out now, if I'm not mistaken, and the progress carries over to the full game.
Oh, that's quite cool.
So that's pretty cool, yeah.
Oh, look at what's coming out next week. Romancevania.
Been looking forward to it. March is a banger. Like Resident
Evil
4.
Remake 4. Just give it to me.
The remake of System Shock? That's going to be great. I'm so keen for that. Nice. You want a great immersive sim? Oh, there's also Dredge. Dredge is like a fishing game, but in a Lovecraftian horror setting. It looks like, what if Bloodborne, but fishing? And
sold.
I'm down for it.
I mean, isn't that basically the Bloodborne DLC? You end up in that fishing village.
Oh my God, with all those weird fish people.
Giant sharks with anchors. No, thank you.
I do not like them. Do not like them.
Yup.
Cool.
Gaming news. There actually was a bit of news this week. I do not know what we should headline with because there's a few big things.
Do we start with, I guess, all of the state of play stuff? A very low-key state of play.
Yeah. It really low-key to the point where I woke up the next morning and was like, oh, that happened?
I mean, I guess everyone kind of expected it. Well, the people who had leaked the direct, they, like Jeff Grubb, he basically said, just expect it to be low-key. Like, their big show is coming later this year. And yeah. It was like a bunch of VR.
Lots of VR.
Games. And then some Suicide Squad gameplay at the end. So, yeah, let's race through this. We've got a game called The Foglands, which kind of looks like Dishonored. It's a VR experience. The game is coming to Oculus Quest 2 and PSVR 2 later this year. Green Hell VR. Looks like a survival game almost.
It's
VR.
Forest in VR.
It is a port, so it is already on all the VR headsets. So
nice.
Yeah. Synapse is a shooter in VR in which you take out faceless goons in a world of black and gray. A colorful prism appears to be behind the violence.
Interesting. Nice.
Kotaku here says it reminds them of Superhot. Doesn't have a release date, but it should be coming out near the end of 2023.
Yeah.
Journey to Foundation. You are a spy tasked with investigating civil unrest on the edge of the Galactic Empire as it appears to begins to crumble. It's planned for PSVR 2 later this fall. Before Your Eyes, which is a phenomenal game that has been out on PC and it's on mobile through Netflix.
Is this the one that uses your camera?
Yes, this is the one that kind of progresses every time you blink, which is super, super cool and super clever.
Super stressful.
It plays a recently deceased character reliving their memories on the way to the afterlife. Every time you blink in real life, the scene changes.
Oh, no.
So sometimes you want to stay on a scene for very long, but then you blink and it's done. And it's like a very poetic way of being like blink and you miss it type of thing. I don't want to blink. Yeah. I think this will be very cool in VR, but you do not need a $550 headset to enjoy this game.
Better than fun.
Yeah. Then we got a look at Destiny 2 Lightfall. It was basically the opening cinematic where the orb thing shot things.
Space wizards.
It showed new trailer showed what will likely be key parts of Lightfall's opening cinematic, including the Traveler using its power to blow up some aliens. Fans have waited almost a decade for this moment. Yeah, because the Traveler hasn't moved since the game launched.
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Traveler's the big orb.
Just the way it's been written here. The Traveler used its powers to blow up some aliens. Fans have waited almost a decade for this moment.
That alien like, got smoked God. And he Darren blew was just like, yes!
Great.
Tichia?
I don't know.
Open world sandbox adventure inspired by the devs of... the devs' homeland of New Caledonia. Appears to be one of the first indie games coming day and date to PS Plus Extra. Comes out on March 21st.
Nice.
Then they showed off the new games for PS Plus in March. It's Battlefield 2042, Code Vein, and nice. Minecraft Dungeons. Cool.
More love for Battlefield 2042, hopefully.
This one's cool. New game from Tetsuya Mizuguchi, the creator of Rez and Tetris Effect. So this is a new puzzle game called Humanity. The action puzzler has you control a dog, a Shiba Inu. Shepherding massive anonymous crowds around surreal environments. It'll support VR 2, and there's a demo out now. The full game arrives in May. I'm keen on this. I mean, I love Rez. I love Tetris Effect. So, yeah, I'll fucking play this.
I just love the premise of this. Just like thousands of people just walking.
It's like a Lemmings game, I guess.
Yeah, it's like a modern day Lemmings.
But it looks like a cool puzzle game. I'm super keen. Hope this comes to PC because this would be rad on like the Steam Deck. Goodbye Volcano High. It's a rhythm visual novel that there's been a bunch of trailers for this. It seems to be good. I think it looks pretty neat. That is out in June. Naruto x Boruto Ultimate Ninja Storm Connections. That's a name.
How many names can you fit into one title? And go.
I guess it's just a fighting game. I mean, do you need to know much more? Oh, this is one that caused a bit of a ruckus, which we'll get to in a bit. But Baldur's Gate 3 got a trailer, and Larian Studios announced a release date of August 31st. It's been in early access for what feels like forever.
It has been a couple of years.
Coming to PS5 and obviously PC. And then it wasn't announced for Xbox. And we'll get to why a bit later.
Nice.
Interesting. Wayfinder, a game that was announced last year at the Game Awards. It's an online action RPG from the studio behind Darksiders Genesis and League of Legends spin-off Ruined King, a League of Legends story.
Nice.
Season 1 of Early Access starts in May. Oh, weird. Nice. So they're doing Early Access on PlayStation consoles. Interesting. Looks like an MMO to me.
It does.
Yeah. What if Fortnite been MMO?
This is a pretty cool trailer.
So we've got the basically the last additions to the launch roster. Zangief, using Zangief. His big feet. And then we've got a new character called Lily. She hails from Mexico and is full of plucky flair, according to Kotaku here. Nice. Trailer ended with a look at Cammy being angry that she has never, that she has to wear a denim jacket with a giant Union Jack on it. My God.
Man, this game looks real good.
Looks sick. Oh, it looks so good. Mm. It's out on June 2nd, Street Fighter 6.
Nice.
It looks really, really good. Cammy's been in multiple games. Yeah, she's a,
she's a
stalwart.
Yeah. Another Resident Evil 4 trailer.
Yeah, another trailer. Apparently a demo is coming to PS5 in the weeks ahead of release of March 24th, so that must be relatively soon.
I am ready.
Yeah, I'm at the point now where they've shown this game off way too much. I just want to play it.
Same. I think it's going to be great. Just launch
it. Yeah, I think it's going to be very good. Yeah, I'm very excited for
this nonsense.
Can't wait to hear the president's daughter scream Leon over and over.
You throw in a garbage.
Yeah.
The garbage chute.
There's no way that's going to be in this game. Not a chance.
Whatever. We're going to put her somewhere. I'm telling you.
My God.
Oh, my goodness.
The last thing that came out was a big look at Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League. This is Rocksteady's first game since Arkham Knight in 2015, 8 years ago. And it is very much a live service cooperative game that you can play single player as long as you have an internet connection.
Nice.
This trailer you can play as Harley Quinn, Captain Boomerang, what is it? Is it King Shark?
I think it's King Shark.
Or Killer Shark?
One King of the Shark. Two.
and Shark what's Man. The other one? Deadshot.
Deadshot. This game had a lot of people scratching their head purely from the live service point of view.
Yeah. There's a lot of numbers. It's very, if you look in the inventory screen, very Destiny-like. Like, it's got some cool traversal elements. Kotaku describes it as a mix between Anthem and Crackdown, and I think that's pretty spot on. Like, each of these characters is, like, jumping in the air and floating there for a very long time. But they all use guns. This looked like a third-person shooter. Like, you could kind of replace the DC characters with new original IP characters that just used guns and you would never tell the difference. Even the Shark mostly uses guns outside of the canned animations where he gets up close with like his hooks and kills someone. I don't know.
Yeah, look, it's a matter of we haven't played the game, but it is worrying. You wonder.
It doesn't instill like confidence. I watched the gameplay and I was just like, I don't know if I want to play this. It didn't look that interesting or fun to me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Especially if this is all like, if it is very live servicey, then a lot of these moments are going to be interspersed with a lot of like inventory management and walking around the world, just doing repetitive tasks. And
So we'll see. Like, I'm here for the story. I'm curious to see what
story could be cool.
What story they tell, but I don't know. We saw, I mean, it's not quite the same, but we saw Gotham Knights last year. Also, that is like it's a live service game, but actually it's not. We stripped this back.
That one was worse, because that very much just didn't have no like idea what it wanted to be. No. Like, yeah.
So we'll see. Anyway. Will it be any
but that's
good?
Out in May. It's fairly soon.
It is actually quite soon.
Yeah.
Nice.
And we're probably going to have a PlayStation showcase in June, you know, around the E3 time. Mm. So let's quickly get to why Baldur's Gate is not on Xbox. Sure. So a lot of people are like, oh, Sony paid for exclusivity of Baldur's Gate. And it turns out that's not true. Sony didn't pay shit. It seems that Larian Studios is just kind of not happy with where the Xbox Series S version of that game currently is. And they are they can't release it on Xbox Series X until they get the Series S stuff up and running. So they basically said, we've run into some technical issues in developing the Xbox port that have stopped us feeling 100% confident in announcing it until we've certainly found the right solutions. Specifically, we've been unable to get split-screen co-op to work to the same standard on both Xbox Series X and S, which is a requirement for us to ship. So they clearly do not like how co-op is running on Xbox Series S, and they can't they don't want to put a date and then like
until that's you know, they know yeah
yeah
well
so,
they what is their last game
Divinity Original Sin
didn't that get ported to the Switch
yeah. So but this is fidelity wise.
No, I know, but
massive jump.
But I'm like,
yeah,
if they could make that game work on the Switch, like maybe with enough time they can get this working.
I think what they're running into on the Series S is the co-op is just taking
too
like
much memory or
too much memory or because the CPU is the same. So yeah, clearly they want it to be the exact same level of quality, gameplay wise. But yeah, bummer.
Nice.
I think it will still come out probably this year.
I also think
so. But, you know, if they're focusing on release, then, yeah, it's totally up to them whether or not. If Microsoft has made it a requirement that the Series S needs to be launched on, then this is kind of the first game that's showing maybe this is a bit of a problem for smaller studios that don't have the sort of budget to, you know, brute force their way through that.
Yeah. Cool. Shall we move to the surprise announcement of Mortal Kombat 12?
Yeah.
In the most low-key way.
The most low-key, most strange. Yeah. So, you know what was weird was that it happened so shortly after the state of play that it almost felt like someone missed something during that presentation. But basically, the CEO and president of Warner Brothers announced on Thursday during an investor call that, yes, Mortal Kombat 12 will be out this year. And he was basically talking about it in the same breath as Suicide Squad. Just being like, oh, we have Suicide Squad and we have Mortal Kombat 12 coming this year. And everyone's like, what?
Excuse me?
Yeah. So NetherRealm hasn't formally announced this.
Yeah.
So there's no gameplay, there's no anything from them. So yeah, I guess that will happen relatively soon, I take it.
Oh, wow.
Especially if it's going to be coming out this year. So
look at this. So yeah, you mentioned before we recorded, Ed Boon was like, what the hell? But I didn't know this, but series co-creator Ed Boon has previously hinted on Twitter that a new game from NetherRealm would arrive in 2023 and offered hope that the boys' Homelander would fit in nicely with the Mortal Kombat
roster.
That'd
be cool. Getting Homeland as a guest character.
Nice.
That'd be pretty cool. That's really cool. Yeah. I'd be down for that. Yeah.
What? Mobile RPG Mortal Kombat Onslaught is slated to launch this year.
Yeah, that's been announced. That's a weird thing.
Did not know that was happening. Well.
But Mortal Kombat 11 was, I didn't realize it was released in 2019. So it was actually before the pandemic.
I thought it was during, because for some reason in my head, I remember playing that like, I don't know, just being stuck.
I think we got into it again because that game had such a tail because they kept releasing good DLC for it. So I think we just jumped back in again at some time, and that was during like lockdown time. So yeah.
Well, there we go.
So yeah, so we've got Tekken 8, Mortal Kombat 12, and Street Fighter 6 all coming out within 6 months of each other.
Fighting
probably.
Fans are going to feast this year.
Feasting.
What do you want to move on to next?
Diablo open beta, because this is kind of old news. It kind of happened during last weekend when we were recording. But yeah, nice. Diablo 4 is getting a open beta in March.
Nice.
If you pre-order Diablo 4, you'll get access on the weekend of the 17th to the 19th. Otherwise, the beta will be open to everyone else the weekend afterwards, March 24th to 20. Yeah, competing with Resident Evil 4's launch that weekend.
Cool.
The betas will be available on all platforms, basically PS4, PS5, PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. You'll just need a Battle.net account. The open beta will consist of the game's prologue and the first act.
Nice.
So you can explore the opening zone, the Fractured Peaks, and level yourself up to level 25.
That's cool.
The beta will let players take on side quests and clear dungeons beyond the story of Act 1. Progress made during the beta will carry over weekend to weekend during the beta, but not the full game.
Oh, well.
That sucks.
Yeah.
But sure.
Well, if you're going to get a feel for the game, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That breadth of content is kind of exactly what I played last year when I got hands-on. It was basically the first act.
Okay.
And I think at the time it was up to level 20, not 25. I might be wrong. But yeah, the Fractured Peaks is a massive, massive zone for you to kind of explore. And
nice.
There are loads of dungeons you can like... You can do a lot in that game.
Mm.
Like, I played a lot.
Nice.
In that zone. So... It's a pity it wouldn't carry over because doing that all again will feel shitty.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Cool. I suppose this is not a logical leap, but Shinji Mikami has departed Bethesda's Tango Gameworks. The Resident Evil creator oversaw 3 horror games for Bethesda in the past decade. Poor one out.
This happened early in the week. It was kind of a shock on the heels of Hi-Fi Rush, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, Shinji Mikami founded Tango Gameworks in 2010, if I'm not mistaken. Mm. So he's been there a very long time. They did The Evil Within, Evil Within 2, Ghostwire Tokyo, and now Hi-Fi Rush. 4 games within 13 years. It's good.
Mm.
He hasn't said where he's going. Bethesda just announced that he has decided to leave in the coming months. So obviously he's just wrapping things up. As far as I know, he was expressing the want to retire almost a decade ago.
But maybe now this will give
him the choice to.
I think
maybe he's going to do something else. So
yeah, I think he is 57.
Yeah, it says later in this article he's 57 yeah. years old. So, you know, he might not have another like 5-year game development cycle in him anymore. So
he's just tired,
but he's had a hell of a career. So he began with Capcom in 1989, created the Resident Evil 1 and 2, and left Capcom in 96. He then
he left Capcom in 2007.
In 2007, sorry. Then went to Platinum Games, directed Vanquish, arguably one of the best shooters of all time. And then in March of 2010, started Tango Gameworks.
Nice.
And did The Evil Within, which he directed. A lot of people, I remember at the time, was like, the Resident Evil creator is making a new survival horror. Like, it was a big thing.
Yeah.
Then he, you know, he didn't direct Evil Within 2, but he was running the studio, essentially. Ghostwire Tokyo and then Hi-Fi Rush. So, yeah.
Nice.
Solid career, I would say.
What do you want to bounce to?
Let's just do
last pieces
Steam
of news.
Quickly. Yeah, Steam. This is weird. I don't know why Steam's done this, but essentially, Valve has just announced when all of their sales are going to happen this year.
Nice.
So I guess if you are planning to buy a game, you can look at this list and then kind of make a decision on whether you think a sale will come soon and you can just pick it up then.
Yeah, because some of these are super specific, like outside of spring sale, summer sale, etc. You've got the Stealth Fest, the Visual Novel Fest, the Strategy Fest, the Schmuck Fest.
So you know exactly. And and they mark the ones as, you know, major seasonal sales, which are like,
everything
that's where the big ones
sale,
come.
Yeah.
So I do wonder if this is a response. Remember when Steam sales used to be like the sale would come, like there'd be rumors on when the sale was coming, then it would come, and then it every day you had to check back because the sales rotated.
I used to love it.
And then they changed it. They were like, cool, all the sales during the sale are the same. And it kind of like, I stopped caring about Steam sales at that point. Like,
yeah, because
there was no incentive.
I remember it used to change every 8 hours and I would check every eight hours.
Yeah.
It was exciting. Yeah. Like, ooh, I don't need anything, but what's on sale?
Exactly. And you'd be like, ooh, do I pull the trigger now or do I wait to see if it comes to a... Yeah. So I guess making all of this more like exposed just further dilutes the excitement around the sale because now you don't even have to like... It's not a, oh, there's a Steam sale on now.
Mm.
I should look now. Now it's like, oh, yeah, I knew that sale was coming.
Yeah. You
know? So I don't know. Strange.
No.
I don't fully understand it, but strange.
Speaking of sales... Elden Ring sells 20 million units. That is a...
Seems like a bit.
A big number. I mean...
That's a gigantic huge. Number.
Yeah, especially for... I don't know, but it just is a big number.
Well, I think it was Daniel Ahmad who was basically saying that Dark Souls 3 took 4 years to do 10 million?
10 million, yeah.
Yeah. Elden Ring's done 20 in one year. Like we were saying the other day on Discord, these games are no longer niche. It's impossible to argue that they are niche because like even before this, you know, 10 million sales for Dark Souls is a lot. Sure, it's over 4 years, but it's a lot.
It's a lot.
20 million in a year is
insane.
It's like genre shifting. Like there's not many games. There's a handful that you can count that do something like this. So it's no longer a case of, oh, these games are played by a hardcore few. This is like, no, loads of people.
Loads of people playing it, yeah.
Loads of people love this game now. Mm. So, yeah, well done to Bandai Namco and From Software.
Mm.
20 million. Huge.
Big number.
20 million tarnished.
And then last bit of news. Nintendo confirms it's missing E3 2023. What is E3?
Yeah, so this was like hinted at earlier this year by IGN. Actually, they reported it, but Nintendo have kind of confirmed it now in a statement. Since this year's E3 show didn't fit into our plans, we made the decision to not participate. However, we have been and continue to be a strong supporter of the ESA and E3, as they would obviously say.
Mm.
So now Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo not attending this E3.
Again, I ask, what
listen,
is
E3? The last E3 that ever happened in person had Nintendo.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you'll get the likes of like Ubisoft, EA, Indies, but it just feels weird to not have the big three.
It feels diluted, more diluted. Like if strange. Microsoft purchases Activision, you won't have Activision at E3. Well, Activision wasn't attending anyway.
No.
To be honest. So I don't know what is at E3 anymore. Like not having the three console makers there is like insane.
Yeah.
And again, it has been like that for a long time. Like Sony and Microsoft haven't been there for a while. And Microsoft to an extent is kind of there. They're just next door.
Mm.
It's just weird. Like Sony's booth was huge, like huge, huge, huge there.
Yeah.
And the E3 we attended, or the E3s I've attended as well, have always had a Sony booth and then a Sony like press room where you can play every single game that is upcoming. Like to not have that there, to not have any meeting rooms for Nintendo at all, and then not have Microsoft, it's just like a huge loss to the show. Yeah. So. It's a bummer.
Well, there you go. That is news for this week.
It was actually quite a bit. That means we're off onto questions. If you want to send us questions, you can email us, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on all social platforms at Checkpoint Chat.
We have...
What is up to this week?
I feel like I'm missing one, but I did see... stuff on Twitter. So remember at Jared Brapra said a while ago, yes. I actually read the last question. He said, I struggled and gave up in the ghost multi-boss arena thing.
Oh, I did see this. The tunic video.
But then, so let me just, oh God, where did your picture go? Give me a second.
Well, that sucks.
All right, you're coming back now. There you are. So this is where he is, I guess. This is awful for audio.
This is really far into the game, I'll say that much.
No, yeah, he's Ghost Tunic. So sorry, spoilers. He's Ghost Tunic.
Yes.
But now, I don't know, it'll be very difficult for you or me to say, oh, it's very clear you must do this. Because, sure, I don't remember. That's the, yeah.
That's oh, anyways, the merchant.
That's the footage I have.
So what was the question? Was he stuck or was he stuck on a bus? Or?
So he didn't know where to go. So his question is, I only managed to download it again now, but I really admit that I haven't played in such a long time, so I've forgotten how this goes. But this is the area in question, in the ghost house thing, and seemed like the only direction I could go in.
There was a ladder downwards there, though.
Yeah, I'd have to do some research, because off the top of my head...
I don't remember either. I would say, honestly, at this point, there's nothing wrong with just looking it up.
Yeah.
Like, look up, get the solution as to where to go next, put away the guide, and continue. Yeah.
So he says, at this point, I'm actually scared I missed something obvious and don't have the memory to go back and play again. No, I'd just look it up.
Just look it up. There's nothing wrong with that. Otherwise, you're going to bang your head against it and probably, like you said, you drop the game and never looked at it again.
Yeah, also, this is a game that it's very difficult to come back to. Because you're
extremely.
There is a way to solve everything. Not in a linear order.
But yeah, from looking at that, I don't even remember what was there, what was around there.
But yeah, that is the only question we had. We all have to either look it up or you're going to have to look it up at your... Just find a guide. I think follow a guide to, you know, this part. So it should be pretty obvious with screenshots. Like, oh, you're in your ghost tunic.
Yeah, ghost tune and ghost fox.
That's a pretty clear indicator of more or less where you are in the game.
Yeah.
Because I wonder, no, I won't say for spoiler purposes, but you do get an ability. I don't know if he's got it yet at this part in the game. Don't know. But that is all the questions we have this week.
Oh, is that
it?
Oh.
That's it.
Cool. If you want to send us questions, you can email us, checkpointchatpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on all our social platforms at Checkpoint Chat. And that has been episode 215 of Checkpoint Chat.
Nice and toit.
Nice and toit. Thank you so much for joining us again, as always, this week. We hope you have a delightful week, delicious one, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And we will see you next week with definitely more games to play.
Escom willing.
Yeah. Escom willing, yeah. Escom willing. Matthew's health willing.
Yeah, yeah. Shit.
If you're listening to this in the past, rip Matthew. Gone too soon.
Gone but not forgotten.
We'll see you next week. Cool. Thanks so much, as always. Okay, bye.
Goodbye.